Tehran. This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
Listen to verse 255 of chapter Baqarah recited by Mr. Ali Asghar Burumand.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Allahu la ilaha illa huwa لا تأخذه سنة ولا نوم له ما في السماوات وما في الأرض من لا تأخذه سنة ولا نوم له ما في السماوات والأرض من ذا الذي يشفع عنده يعلم ما بين أيديهم وما خلفهم ولا يحيطون بشيء ولا يؤوده حفظهما وهو العلي العظيم.
the name of God, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Allah is He, besides whom there is no God, the ever-living, the self-subsisting, by whom all subsist. Slumber does not overtake Him, nor sleep. Whatever is in the heavens, and whatever is in the earth, is His. Who is He that can intercede with Him, but by His permission? He knows what is before them and what is behind them, and they cannot comprehend anything out of His knowledge except what He pleases. His knowledge extends over the heavens and the earth, and the preservation of them both tires Him not, and He is the Most High, the Great.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Headlines. Human rights groups have slammed France over the Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman's visit to Paris, his first trip to Europe since the murder of journalist Jamal Khashoggi. Russia strikes the outskirts of the Ukrainian capital Kiev for the first time in weeks as Ukraine starts an offensive in the south of the country to retake two major cities. And Taiwan says it will maintain its cooperation with the United States, hours after China warned Washington against playing with fire over the status of the self-ruled island. Hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to World News. Our top story is Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman's visit to Paris and his meeting with the French President Emmanuel Macron has sparked outrage. The widow of murdered Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi slammed Macron for welcoming the, quote, executioner of her fiancé. Hatice Changi said that all international investigations carried out so far recognize the Saudi Crown Prince's responsibility in the gruesome murder. Three rights groups have called on the French authorities to open a criminal probe into Mohammed bin Salman. They filed a legal complaint with the Paris court saying the royal should not have immunity from prosecution for being the Saudi head of state. Bin Salman arrived in Paris Thursday after a stopover in Greece. Khashoggi was killed in 2018 by Saudi agents inside the country's consulate in Istanbul.
France continues to be at the forefront of the West's effort to whitewash Saudi autocrat Mohammed bin Salman, who even Western leaders believe was behind the brutal murder of journalist Jamal Khashoggi in 2018. After the murder, French President Emmanuel Macron was the first Western leader to visit the House of Saud last December, and now he has rolled out the red carpet for the Crown Prince's first visit to Europe. Human rights groups and leftist politicians strongly criticized Macron's decision, just as they criticized his legitimizing embrace in 2020 of Libyan warlord Khalifa Haftar and Egyptian military dictator Abdel Fattah el-Sisi, as well as Macron's enormous arms sales to Arab monarchs for their brutal war against Yemen. Already tenuous claims to support human rights in the Middle East have become increasingly irrelevant to Western leaders as their sanctions campaign against Russia has dramatically backfired against their own economies. Energy prices have soared in Europe, causing record inflation, and energy outages loom this winter.
At the beginning of the year, France's annual economic growth rate was expected to be 4%. The government has already slashed that prediction almost in half, and it could fall even further.
The great revolution linked to Ukraine and the Russian sanctions is that if you're a purchaser of oil instead of a producer of oil, then you're going to view bilateral relations in a strictly economic manner in order to ensure your future supplies. This is going to change relations with many countries, such as Saudi Arabia, Morocco, Algeria, the UAE, and others.
Just a week ago, Macron received the head of the United Arab Emirates, signing a strategic agreement to cooperate in the energy sector. The Paris visit by the de facto Saudi ruler comes 2 weeks after a visit to Riyadh by United States President Joe Biden, who backtracked on his promise to make Saudi Arabia a pariah state because of the Khashoggi murder.
Les Saoudiens, oui, un petit peu.
When it comes to the level of output, only Saudi Arabia has the ability to raise oil and gas production. Europe cannot turn to Russia anymore, and nor can they reliably turn to the US, where fracked shale gas has been a total failure. In a global climate of recession and inflation, we see no hesitation to protect energy deliveries.
Analysts say that the West is calling in their longtime support of brutal absolute monarchies and dictatorships in the Middle East, demanding that they direct their oil and gas supplies towards Europe amid the unrest in Ukraine. Ramin Mazahari, Paris.
Fighting rages across Ukraine as Russia strikes the outskirts of the capital, Kiev, for a first time in weeks. A regional governor says 15 people have died during Russian strikes in Vyshhorod district near the capital. In the northwest of Kiev, more than 20 missiles have been fired at the city of Chernihiv. Meanwhile, Ukraine has started a campaign in the south to retake the cities of Kherson and Zaporizhia. Ukrainian officials say they are aiming to isolate Kherson from other parts of Russian-controlled areas. They say they have struck 5 Russian strongholds in the region. Also in eastern Ukraine, Russia is closing in on Donetsk province after shelling the strategic town of Bakhmut. Russia reduces gas flows to Germany from 40% down to 20% capacity via the Nord Stream 1 pipeline. Moscow says the move on Wednesday is to facilitate repairs. The European Commission insists the decision is politically motivated due to tensions over the Ukraine conflict. Jerome Hughes reports from Brussels.
Up to a quarter of the EU's electricity demand is generated using gas. In some of the bloc's member states, it is higher. As less of it arrives from Russia, EU nations have agreed to reduce gas consumption by 15% until spring.
I think at the end, everybody understands that this sacrifice is necessary. We have to, and we will share the pain.
Many in the European Parliament say the pain is not being shared equally.
Only working class people are dying, but the EU has done nothing to stop us. And so many people in here are glad the war has taken place.
Within NATO, there is opposition to Finland and Sweden joining the military alliance. Within the EU, there is opposition to the bloc's foreign policy towards Russia. There are also tensions between the EU and the UK. At present, it appears diplomacy in the West simply isn't working. Trust between allies is at an all-time low. How this will all play out is anybody's guess. It has been suggested that Russia wants Western allies to fall out.
Now is not the time for finger-pointing. We understand that they want to destroy, they want to divide, they want to split this solidarity and unity.
Critics say the West is responsible for the war in Ukraine because Russia's security concerns were ignored and even preyed upon. Experts suggest the conflict has highlighted the EU's weaknesses and has exposed the lack of energy infrastructure investment within the bloc.
That is why investing in grids, in interconnectors, in something as boring as pipelines, that matters.
Ordinary people in the EU are asking, how did we get to this point? There is a cost of living crisis and all sorts of security concerns. Analysts warn there will be political ramifications. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Taiwan says it will maintain its cooperation with the United States amid rising tensions between Washington and Beijing over the self-ruled island. According to a statement by Taiwan's foreign ministry, the territory will continue to develop its close security partnership with Washington. Reaction came after a phone call between the Chinese and U.S. presidents. During that conversation, Xi Jinping strongly warned Joe Biden against a potential visit to the island by U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi.
Those who play with fire will eventually get burned. I hope the U.S. side can fully understand that. The United States should abide by the One China principle with regard to Taiwan and ensure that its actions are consistent with its words.
Now, this is the latest in a series of warnings since reports emerged that Pelosi could pay a visit to Taipei during her regional tour this August. Last week, the Financial Times reported that China had alarmed the U.S. privately that the move could possibly provoke a military response. And Beijing stressed that such a visit will send a wrong signal to separatist forces in Taiwan. If she arrives in Taiwan, it will be the first trip by a sitting U.S. House Speaker in over 20 years. Beijing is opposed to Washington's growing military and diplomatic ties with Taiwan, which China considers as part of its territory.
Tensions are rising between China and the United States. Beijing has issued a stern warning against a potential visit by the U.S. House of Representatives Speaker Nancy Pelosi to Chinese Taipei. Beijing says that Washington will be responsible for the consequences of the possible visit. Chinese side has made it clear to the U.S. that it is firmly opposed to Speaker Pelosi's visit to Taiwan. We are fully prepared. If the U.S. goes its own way, China will certainly take firm and forceful measures to safeguard its national sovereignty and territorial integrity, and the U.S. should be held responsible for any serious consequences.
So the idea that she would visit Taiwan at this point is intended to provoke a crisis with China. Recall that the U.S. and the British forced NATO expansion, totally ignoring Russia's security interests with the so-called reverse Cuba Missile Crisis, whose purpose was to provoke Russia into acting against the neo-Nazi regime in Ukraine. In order to justify the wildly illegal and self-defeating sanctions, economic warfare against Russia.
Analysts believe the latest warning by China against the visit of the U.S. House Speaker to Chinese Taipei was harsher in tone and very stern. Some say the threats contained an allusion to a possible military confrontation between China and the U.S., and that is why reservations have been raised in Washington about the visit. The U.S. House Speaker was scheduled to visit Taipei earlier in April, but the trip was apparently canceled after she contracted COVID. However, some reports say that Pelosi will make the controversial visit in August. Apart from top Democrats, some hawkish Republicans have also come out in favor of the visit, stressing that this visit is a show of support against China.
This is a very serious crisis. How China responds is very difficult to foresee, but it's a moment in which the literally madmen and women in the West are trying to do to China what they are in the process of doing against Russia.
And the problems that exist between China and the U.S. are many. There have been U.S. attempts to militarize the South China Sea, like arms sales to Japan and Chinese Taipei. South China Sea Islands, which the U.S. disputes, is another issue. Then there's the issue of Russia, which the U.S. has threatened to sanction if it continues to buy Russian oil. A trade war and a technology are other areas where Washington has clashed with Beijing.
There are few people today who doubt that China is a global superpower, both militarily and economically. In terms of the economy, China's economy has continued to grow over the past few decades and is well on its way to overtake the U.S.'s by the year 2030. In terms of military and technology, China is now a superpower on par with the U.S., although Washington's military budget is still the largest in the world. Politicians in Washington who are still dreaming of a unipolar world order that came into existence following the collapse of the Soviet Union do not tolerate the rise of China. The first sign of the unease began to emerge after the former U.S. President Barack Obama announced his pivot to Asia policy, which was meant to counter China's rising influence. Obama's successors, Trump and Biden, have continued Washington's anti-China rhetoric. The two superpowers are locked over a number of issues, including trade and the South China Sea. The bone of contention is Chinese Taipei, and Beijing has made it very clear that it will not allow the self-ruled island to become independent.
it really can only be averted at this point by the nations of the West recognizing that they have no solution to the now terminal breakdown of the dollar system, the hyperinflationary collapse, other than sitting down with Russia and with China in a new Bretton Woods conference to replace the now completely broken and destroyed Bretton Woods system that was set up by Franklin Roosevelt and has been systemically taken apart over these last 30 years.
Chinese Taipei is under China's sovereignty and under the One China policy. The United States and other countries have recognized that sovereignty. But Washington, in violation of its own stated policy, and in an attempt to irritate Beijing, has increased diplomatic contact with the Chinese Taipei.
Large-scale joint U.S.-South Korea military exercises will go ahead in August for the first time in over 4 years. This amid North Korea's warning of the destabilizing impacts of such exercises on regional security. Frank Smith has your details.
South Korea will soon resume large-scale military exercises with the United States. Seoul's recently appointed foreign minister Wednesday met with the foreign press and explained the importance of the U.S. alliance in the drills.
We expect that the Ministry of National Defense will resume training to maintain the South Korea-U.S. combined defense capabilities so that South Korea's security can be maintained.
The South Korean envoy placed the responsibility for subsequent military tension on North Korea.
North Korea's nuclear and missile development and provocations are the most important causes of tension on the Korean Peninsula.
North Korea recently resumed ballistic missile testing after a self-imposed moratorium aimed at negotiating a lifting of U.S.-led sanctions, which remain in effect. Meanwhile, South Korea's further developed and tested missile technology and deployed several advanced U.S. weapon systems, raising concern in Pyongyang.
The U.S. and its allies are increasing their military pressure on our republic. All this is raising serious concern that the ravages of the war 72 years ago could be repeated here. Our measures to build up national defense capabilities are the legitimate and righteous exercise of our sovereignty to defend our national security and territory against military threats.
South Korea said this year's drills will include 11 field exercises, amphibious operations, and an air carrier strike group. South Korean officials have said the joint military exercises with the U.S. will begin on August 22nd, and for the first time since 2018, include field training. As new South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol pivots to a hardline approach to Pyongyang, inter-Korean ties appear destined for greater tension. Frank Smith, Seoul.
Iran's Minister of Industry, Mine and Trade, Seyed Reza Fatemi Amin, has attended the 15th Iran-Belarus Joint Economic Commission in the city of Minsk. He joined us earlier to talk about the summit. Fatemi Amin says that Tehran and Minsk agreed to increase trade volume to over $1 billion. Venezuela and Colombia have agreed to restore their diplomatic ties once newly elected Colombian President Gustavo Petro takes office next week. Now, that decision came after Venezuelan Foreign Minister Carlos Faria hosted Colombia's Foreign Minister-elect Alvaro Leyva in a border town on Thursday. The two diplomats expressed desire to progress on a work agenda toward the gradual normalization by naming ambassadors and consular officials from August the 7th. And that's it for your latest here, everyone. Thank you for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
the supplication on Fridays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, the first before the bringing forth and the giving of life, and the last after the annihilation of all things. The All-Knowing who forgets not him who remembers him, and decreases not him who thanks him, and disappoints not him who supplicates him, and cuts not off the hope of him who hopes in him. O Allah, I call thee to witness, and thou art sufficient witness, and I call to witness all thy angels, and the inhabitants of thy heavens, and the bearers of thy throne, and thy prophets, and thy messengers whom thou hast sent out, and the various kinds of creatures thou hast brought forth, that I bear witness that thou art Allah. There is no God but thou, thou alone, who hast no associate nor any equal, and thy word has no failing nor any change. And that Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, is thy servant and thy messenger. He delivered to the servants that with which thou charged him, and he struggled for Allah as is his due. And he gave the good news of the truth of reward, and he warned of the veracity of punishment. O Allah, make me firm in thy religion as long as thou keepst me alive. And make not my heart to swerve after thou hast guided me, and give me mercy from thee. Surely thou art the giver. Bless Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, and make me one of his followers and his partisans. And muster me in his band, and give me the success of accomplishing the obligatory observance of Friday, and performing the acts of obedience which thou hast made incumbent upon me within it, and receiving the bestowal which thou hast apportioned for its people on the day of recompense. Thou, only thou, art the mighty wise.
In the limelight. In Britain, shop prices for the month of July soared by the greatest amount since at least 2005, as the cost of fresh food was driven up by rising charges for fertilizer, animal feed and transport. The article you're about to hear has been written by the Guardian journalist Sarah Butler. The piece is titled, Rising production costs lead to 4.4% rise in UK shop prices. In Britain, shop prices for the month of July soared by the greatest amount since at least 2005. As the cost of fresh food was driven up by rising charges for fertilizers, animal feed and transport. Prices rose by 4.4% compared to July of last year, a step up from a year-on-year rise of 3.1% in June, according to the British Retail Consortium's latest shop price index, collated with market research firm Nielsen IQ. Fresh food inflation soared to 8%, according to the index, from 6.2% a month before, the highest rate since March of 2009. That contributed to overall food inflation of 7%. Helen Dickinson, the chief executive of the British Retail Consortium, a trade body which represents most major retailers in Britain, said some of the biggest price rises were seen in dairy products, including lard, cooking fats and butter. Helen Dickinson added, households and businesses must prepare for a difficult period as inflationary pressures hit home. Rising production costs, from the price of animal feed and fertilizer to availability of produce exacerbated by the war in Ukraine, coupled with exorbitant land transport costs, led food prices to rocket. The high rate of inflation on basic food essentials is likely to hit low-income households in Britain much harder, ramping up pressure on those already affected by the cut in universal credit benefits and rising energy and petrol costs. A fifth of British households now have an average shortfall of £60 a week between what they earn and what they need to cover essentials such as energy bills, rent, transport and food. As the rising cost of living leaves people with the lowest amount of spare cash in almost 5 years, according to data from the Asda Income Tracker, collated by the Centre for Business and Economic Research, CBER, out this week. Shoppers are switching to discount stores, dropping brands in favour of supermarkets' own label goods, and trimming back spending on luxuries such as subscription services as they try to make their budget stretch. Food is not the only contributor to shop price inflation. Non-food prices were pushed up by 3% on July of last year, according to the BRC figures, as a result of higher shipping and production costs, partly caused by continuing disruption in China from COVID-related restrictions. Helen Dickinson said, as inflation reaches new heights, retailers are doing all they can to absorb as much of these rising costs as possible and to look for efficiencies in their businesses and supply chain. With households enduring a cost-of-living crunch, retailers are expanding their value ranges to offer the widest variety of goods to those most in need, providing discounts to vulnerable groups and raising staff pay. Also in Britain, in the Conservative Party leadership race, Rishi Sunak has promised to scrap VAT on household fuel bills for a year to tackle the cost of living crisis, in a dramatic U-turn as he battles to remain in the race to become the next Prime Minister. With his rival Liz Truss promising £30 billion in immediate tax cuts, Rishi Sunak has reportedly stressed the risk of unfunded promises and insisted he has already taken action to cushion the blow of the sharp increase in domestic energy bills expected in October. But as he continues to trail the Foreign Secretary Liz Truss in polls of Tory members, and with ballot papers landing within days, he announced a new handout worth £160 for every household, despite having previously condemned the policy. As Chancellor, I knocked £400 off everyone's energy bill and provided support of £1,200 for the most vulnerable households. This additional VAT cut will help deal with the current emergency, Rishi Sunak said, claiming it was a benefit of Brexit that he was able to take the measure. He added, this temporary and targeted tax cut will get people the support they need, while also, critically, bearing down on price pressures.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/EN.
Midstream.
Have passed since the launch of the Islamic resistance in Lebanon, Hezbollah, a memory dear to the heart of every believer in the inevitability of divine victory, and for every believer who dreams of a day free from injustice and oppression in a nation that has nursed injustice and oppression since its early beginnings. With their tender flesh, they resisted, struggled, and persevered. They all came out of small houses from besieged neighborhoods. They saw their families being humiliated at checkpoints, their mothers killed, their fathers' bodies dismembered, their livelihoods stolen at the hands of an enemy wreaking havoc and terror in their country. It was then when the dawn of the resistance broke out in Beirut and South Lebanon. Those few defeated the mightiest of armies, obliging them to retreat towards the so-called occupied strip. Throughout 40 years, their brown hands wove the scarf of freedom, to be completed in the year 2000. Victories rolled in until a 2006 victory that shook all corners of the earth. Who are they, those few Arab men who made miracles and defeated the army that was once called the undefeatable army? 40 years of effort, resistance, glory, liberation, dignity, and martyrdom. 40 years of generosity to the homeland and to the ultimate freedom of all the oppressed in the world. Hezbollah, which offered redemption to the Arabs, presented above all the eloquent lesson of victory, how the martyr with pure blood turned everything around him into a force capable of steadfastness and victory. Hezbollah transformed the dirt of betrayal, disappointment, and continuous Arab failure into steadfastness, hope, and victory. 40 years later, Hezbollah became a party that the enemy fears and respects at the same time. A resistance that is keen to reveal, but its silence is a message in itself, which many seek to decipher. 40 years and Hezbollah is rooted in Lebanon, fixed in this country as firmly as its mountains. Its upbringing was not fleeting or devoid of Lebanese history and geographical extension around which a large group of Lebanese gathered, because Hezbollah represented the legitimacy of the resistance to liberate Lebanon, protect it, and contribute to building its state. It is the 40 springs, 40 wisdom, knowledge, patience, morals, and humility. It is 40 strength, power, honor, dignity, and victory. 40 years in which there is no aging, because this party has different, multiplied, interconnected generations,
always ready to serve the honorable march of Hezbollah. Welcome to the Middle East Stream. I'm Marwa Osman. Years have passed since the launch of the Islamic resistance in Lebanon, Hezbollah, a memory dear to the heart of believers in the inevitability of divine victory. It might not be an exaggeration to say that in the past century, it has been very rare to find an organization in this region that had such presence, resonance, and influence as much as Hezbollah. It is true that there are entities that passed through this region and had a presence and a transnational influence, but they did not live long in this role due to their lack of ability to reconcile principle and flexibility and their lack of understanding of reality. Hezbollah was able to develop a special model based on its ideological structure, its rich jihadi experience, and the peculiarity of the Lebanese reality. It combined its first identity as a resistance against the Zionist occupation, the American hegemony, and the imperatives of engaging in this Lebanese political spectrum. To discuss this issue, with us from Beirut is Dr. Ibrahim Moussaoui, Lebanese Member of Parliament for the Loyalty to the Resistance Bloc, Hezbollah. It's a pleasure always having you with us, Sayyid Moussaoui. Now, beginning with the 40 years, the 40 springs of Hezbollah, Hezbollah has been rooted in Lebanon, representing the legitimacy of the resistance that has liberated Lebanon, further wants to protect it, and also wants to contribute to building the state. Throughout these 40 years, what was the most challenging role of all these three representations?
Thank you for the introduction. This is a very fascinating and very well done presentation about the organization, about the party, about the resistance, about the very sophisticated role in Lebanon. We know very well that Hezbollah has been engaged as a political party and as a resistance movement in so many different activities. It's not only limited to the military part. Part of it, when you talk about war, you talk about disasters of war. When we found ourselves under the occupation by the Israeli occupation that is being backed by the Americans and the Western governments, and many of the retrogressive Arab systems as well. We had to deal with the calamities of the occupation. When you talk about occupation, you talk about aggressions, invasions, killings, destruction, and you have to remedy all. You have to take care of the orphans that come after their fathers are dead. You have to deal with those whose houses are being destroyed. You have to deal with other social and livelihood issues. So it's a very sophisticated, very combined, very complicated task that Hezbollah has, if you want, shouldered in the country. Mm-hmm. When, if you ask me about the most difficult issue, this has been said by the Secretary General, the leader of Hezbollah, Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah. When you talk about building the government, when you talk about building the political system, when you talk about building the state entities, here is the problem, because we have faced corruption. So Nasrallah said it once that fighting Israel is maybe 2,000 times easier than fighting the corruption within the system in
Professor,
Lebanon.
40 years now, during which Hezbollah did not work as a resistance to the occupation only, but although it precedes all its actions from the necessity of this resistance, we have also the cultural, the economic, and the political levels that Hezbollah has been engaged in. Now, Hezbollah also cares about the fate and the future of Lebanon and contributes to the establishment of a more just society, a society that the Lebanese maybe aspire to have someday all across the Lebanese spectrum. Some would say that Hezbollah has failed politically. What's your take on that?
Well, I mean, it's very simple to say Hezbollah has failed or Hezbollah has won. If we want to give a very meticulous, a very accurate, a very precise answer to this question, you have to dig deep down into the ailments of the system of Lebanon. This political system has many ailments and has many problems. I did say something about the confessionalism, about the sectarianism, about this, if you want, kind of dictation by the outside. Lebanon has never been at any time a very free country. We now, why are we suffering from what we are suffering? If we talk about electricity that has, if you want, consumed one-third of the debts of Lebanon, $40 billion have been put into electricity, and we don't have electricity till now. No infrastructures, no whatever. They are still talking about building plants in order to produce electricity. Why is that? It's because of corruption. Mm-hmm. Why corruption? It's because of confessionalism, sectarianism. The ailments of the system dates long time before the advance of Hezbollah. Hezbollah has not been there when all of this, if you want, sectarian system has been built by the outside forces. And again, if you ask me, what's the problem now? I tell you, it's the American dictations. It's the American intervention, the American interference. The American ambassador, and all Lebanese know that as a fact. The American ambassador promised that we will have electricity in 1 month, a year ago, and we don't have it up till now. Why is that? It is because that they are dictating upon the Lebanese not to take any help from Iran, from Russia, from China, from anywhere.
Well, Professor, Hezbollah is indebted to its Lebanese people for their honorable sacrifices. No one can deny that, nor do they have the right to. It is indebted to the support of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Everyone also knows that. The Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps and the Al-Quds Force, we also know that. And to the leadership of the leader of the revolution, Sayyid Imam Ali Khamenei, who is on the path of late Imam Ruhullah Khomeini. But does this all make Hezbollah in particular an extension of Iranian influence in West Asia, as the foes of Hezbollah always put it in Lebanon?
Well, the foes of Hezbollah, those who wants to really know the reality of Hezbollah, they know very well that thanks to the Iranian Islamic Republic, thanks to Imam Khamenei, thanks to Imam Khomeini, we are proud to have this relation. It's an honorable thing to have a relation with such a great civilization, with such a great republic, with such a great state. Everybody knows that the Iranians are challenging, and Sayyid Nasrallah, the leader of Hezbollah, and we challenge them to provide one shred of evidence that we have put anything other than our national interest, our national priority, our Lebanese priority. Yes, our relation with Iran is very public, is very open. It's not a secret. But I can tell you very well that Hezbollah is in a position to make influences on the approaches of Iran towards not only Lebanon, towards the Arab region as well, more than Iran has influence on Hezbollah. Why? Because there is this such great respect and the trust to Hezbollah capabilities, not only on the military level, but also on the political level, on this maturity of decision, on this wisdom of the leadership of Hezbollah in order to make the good things to Lebanon and to the region. That's why all of these things that they talk about, and here I go back to your previous question about whether Hezbollah failed or succeed or didn't succeed or it was a problem. No, it cannot be weighed this matter, actually. You have to see what kind of conspiracies have been planned and plotted against Hezbollah, against Lebanon. And you see that all through the conspiracies, all through the battles, all through the wars, we have succeeded in them all, didn't we? Mm-hmm. We remember the assassination of Hariri, and they wanted to make this fitna between Sunnites and Shias. And Sayyid Nasrallah took the initiative and he started to move all over, risking his life just to sabotage these efforts of fitna. Take the 2006 war, what they did. Take the Syrian war, when Hezbollah took the decision early enough because of his wisdom, leadership, in order to go and fight there. It's always the case now, after the 40 years, now the 40 years of Hezbollah. Hezbollah is proving to be not only a safety valve for Lebanon, but only for the region, and not only for Lebanon on protecting and liberating the territories, now on protecting the fortunes. Now America and the West, they have only paid attention to Lebanon when Sayyid Nasrallah came 2 weeks ago, and they said, if we are going to be denied our right in our gas and in our oil in the sea, no one is going to extract a drop of oil.
And that's why this put everyone on on their toes there.
Absolutely.
And put these, especially the Americans
true.
In Lebanon.
Very true. And now we have been able to listen to the positive reaction from the Americans. Now they are ready to discuss with Lebanon because, you know, again, I go to the wisdom of the leadership about the assessment, the meticulous, precise assessment. We are in a very rare moment of strategic opposition to the Israeli-American imperialist project in the region and in the world. Because of this Ukrainian-Russian war, they want to spare and they want to make sure that they can take every drop and every shred of gas from the region and from all over the world. That's why it's our term to dictate our conditions.
And as
in
clear
order.
As I see you, Professor Moussaoui, all the Lebanese people, just like I am, even if I'm going to sound biased here, but I'm Lebanese first and foremost.
Absolutely.
I know that our wealth is in good hands since it is in the hands
Absolutely.
Of the resistance. I want to thank you very much, Professor Ibrahim Moussaoui, Lebanese Member of Parliament, for the loyalty to the resistance bloc Hezbollah, for joining us on the 40th spring of Hezbollah. Thank you for your time. And please stay tuned because next we are going to talk about the faith of the Mujahideen of Hezbollah.
This is Midstream, and here is IRIB English Radio. Dear listeners, in this weekly program, Marvo Osman discusses two important issues related to West Asia region with two political analysts. Midstream is with you every Friday on IRIB English Radio.
Years of jihad, during which the resistance Hezbollah changed the balance of power after it was a group of oppressed, believing mujahideen. They worked towards Allah, so the Almighty helped them and made their stance firm. 40 years during which the youth of Hezbollah were raised on good intentions, faith in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and good morals. The people loved them. They loved their people back, and they were worthy of giving, of sacrifice, of steadfastness, and trust. This made their opponents, their enemies, and their friends as well believe in their capabilities and in their will and their strength and the determination to become victorious. And here they are. After they achieved the dream of liberation in 2000 and victory in July 2006 and liberation from Takfiri terrorism, they made people believe that with the presence of this resistance, a liberated Al-Quds has become closer. Hezbollah, 40 years young, in this following report.
For 40 years, Hezbollah did not leave Lebanon vulnerable to the projects of partition, normalization, and bargaining, and did not abandon its responsibilities towards the Lebanese. This is what made the U.S. and their allies try to distort its image and hold it responsible for the crises hitting Lebanon, in order to exonerate the allies of America who stole Lebanon and plundered it with their policies and behaviors from the 90s until today. For 40 years, the experience of Hezbollah has been pure white at all levels and according to its capabilities, at the top of which is resistance. Then comes politics, development, helping the poor and the vulnerable to overcome crises, breaking the siege in oil derivatives, and helping out in the file of medicine and foodstuffs and other files such as electricity, water, and the development of towns, roads, and infrastructure. For 40 years, Hezbollah did not abandon its Lebanese role and did not depart from Lebanese concerns, except when it works in regional files. It works out of the necessity of making use of its power to liberate Lebanon from American hegemony and to make Lebanon a country with institutions and a free decision. A state whose political and economic system is built according to the visions and aspirations of its people, not through the visions and aspirations of the Americans, the Zionists, the regional countries of normalization, and some of their tools that seek to achieve their goals in Lebanon, to make it a riot for those tools in order to achieve American and Zionist projects. This is how Hezbollah is working on all files at home and abroad, based on the Lebanese interest first and foremost. For Hezbollah, Palestine is the axis and the central issue. Hezbollah has always been supportive of the Palestinian people and their resistance to liberate their land, believing that there is no solution, neither through settlement, nor with American sponsorship, nor by relying on the Security Council, which is manipulated by the United States and Israel. Hezbollah's resistance has become the flame of the tripartite of light: liberation, independence, and protection. And it is the pillar of strong Lebanon in its tripartite, as it is the supporter of the peoples of the region and the axis of resistance. 40 years during which the youth of Hezbollah were raised on good intentions, faith in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and good morals. So Allah loved them, and they loved him back. And people loved them, and they loved their people. And they were worthy of giving, sacrifice, steadfastness, and trust, which made their opponent, their enemy, and their friend believe in their abilities, their will, their strength, and their determination to victory.
To discuss this issue with us from Beirut is Sheikh Khudr Nuruddin, member of the Hezbollah Political Council. I want to thank you very much for being with us, Samaht Sheikh Khudr Nuruddin. Thanks a million for your time. Now, there are certain basic and decisive elements that made Hezbollah such a strong presence, among them the dimension of faith, which urges its members to endure and to sacrifice, represented in the trilogy of faith, jihad, and martyrdom. However, this dimension has been heavily criticized, especially lately, when it comes to a systematic campaign to demonize Hezbollah inside Lebanon and the region because of its faith and the ideology, separating it from what they so call it, the Lebanese culture. How effective do you think such campaigns are, and what is the importance of faith element in the presence of Hezbollah?
In the name of Allah, the most gracious and the most merciful, salam be upon he who have revived the Islam of Muhammad, peace be upon him, and brought us back to the fields of confrontation against falsehood. For your question, considering Hezbollah to be on the side of righteousness, was first involved in liberating the land and the detainees. Our ground rule in dealing with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is the Quranic verse, and if you help Allah, Allah will help you and make your feet firm. Added to that, the passion towards Allah that Imam Khomeini revived in our mind and soul, seeking divine satisfaction, was the goal. And from there, the fear of death was gone. When a human fears death, he falls. Usually enemies and tyrants raise fear in the hearts of people through death. So when humans challenge death and consider it to be a chance to meet Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala after fulfilling their role, just like what Imam Ali and Imam Hussein did, then this weapon of fear falls. When this weapon fell, the enemy, Israel in specific, became exposed. The enemy's truth was revealed. Israel is weaker than a spider's web. Israel is built on mere media propaganda. This is why in 2006 we saw this horrifying fall of the Zionist entity. The prestige that Israel used to jump from one victory to the other against Arab countries was broken in Hezbollah's 2000 victory. This victory was attained through the belief of the resistance in its legitimacy and its rights and its perseverance to attain these rights. This victory not only broke Israel, but also remotivated the Palestinians and revived the Arab hope. After the Arab regimes had killed that hope so as to push the public to surrender under the slogan that the Zionist army is undefeatable. However, this slogan was broken in the battlefield.
Well, aside from that, we also see that in the stage of getting involved in Lebanese politics and the internal hardships of the Lebanese politics, it was accompanied by the development of Hezbollah's institutions and organizations, like, for example, media organizations, educational ones, cultural ones, social, agricultural, urban, medical, financial, and even sports and scouts. Given the financial crisis that has hit Lebanon since 2019, how has these institutions been handy without becoming a state within a state?
In general, yes, Hezbollah institutions, which you mentioned, were filling in the place of absent government institutions. Hence, what was intended for a clash between us and the government under the title Hezbollah is a state within the state was dropped, simply because we never took the place of the government and refused to do so, despite many events that made way for us to do so. For example, in the 2000 liberation, we were fully capable of taking revenge from the Lebanese Zionist agents who killed our people and our fighters. However, we completely left this matter to the hands of the government and its justice system, regardless of the results of the judiciary, because we never intended to take the role of governance or to eliminate its role to begin with. Also, another example is the so-called 2019 October Revolution, which took place in Beirut, planned and led by what I call the American ogre, the American devil, which aimed to push the Lebanese public to clash with Hezbollah and hold him responsible for bringing down the country. However, good leadership and wisdom in dealing with this event led to the failure of the American project completely. Finally, they failed and we in Hezbollah remained under the umbrella of the government, always reassuring the public that we abide by our golden tripartite, the army, the people, and the resistance. Therefore, we never were taking the role of the government, and we never will be doing so in the future. On the contrary, we shall be at the service of our government and our army.
Well, between the year 1982, the date of inception, the date of birth, and today in 2022, reaching for the 40th of maturity, a timeline filled with the colors of challenges and of storms in which things were very hard for Hezbollah, yet in several stations, God secured a way out for the Mujahideen of Hezbollah. In some of them, the hearts of the lovers trembled, and the haters claimed that the party had fallen and was about to meet its end fate. Clear propaganda, obviously, yet how would you suggest the toughest challenge has been so far for Hezbollah as a whole?
In my personal opinion, I believe that the biggest challenge that Hezbollah ever faced was trying to get Hezbollah involved in internal turmoil, shifting the resistance weapons compass. Instead of being directed toward the temporary Zionist enemy, it was intended to make these weapons face the interior Lebanese society. The wisdom of our leadership and the political awareness built inside the society of resistance, supporters and fighters, which Sayyid Hassan Nasrullah reflected upon as being sharp insight. This led to the failure of the enemy plans and resulted in our benefit rather than theirs. Here I mentioned the patience that we in Hezbollah endured and our people endured. Our affirmation and concern for stability and internal civil peace brought down the U.S. plans of chaos in Lebanon and brought the resistance closer to its own people internally, where we now have strong allies in the Christian sect which were once misled by false propaganda and lies.
Well, I want to thank you very much from Beirut, Sheikh Khodr Nuruddin, member of the Hezbollah Political Council, for your time and contribution as we celebrate really 40 years of resistance in Lebanon, resistance of Hezbollah. Thank you very much for your time. And thank you. Please stay tuned next week for more hot topics from the Mideast Stream.
In the limelight.
Israeli regime is feeling no international pressure to end its tightened blockade on Gaza, which entered its 15th year this summer. Please stay with us for an article in this regard, written by Maureen Claire Morphy, journalist. This article is published under the heading Cruelty Against Gaza Patients, Enabled by US and EU. Stay tuned for more. The Israeli regime is feeling no international pressure to end its tightened blockade on Gaza, which entered its 15th year this summer. The Jerusalem Declaration, signed by U.S. President Joe Biden and the Zionist regime Prime Minister Yair Lapid earlier this month, makes no demand on Tel Aviv to lift the siege on Gaza. In fact, it makes no direct mention of Gaza at all. The territory is only referred to indirectly, where it states that the U.S. is committed to seeking additional assistance for the Israeli regime in exceptional circumstances, such as the hostilities over 11 years in May 2021. During that week and a half, the Zionist regime inflicted yet another catastrophe on Gaza. The Israeli regime used weapons made by Boeing, a company based in Chicago, to destroy residential towers in Gaza, massacring families in their homes. Stateless Palestinians are not allowed to defend themselves from the existential threat posed by Israeli regime arms provided by the U.S. and are branded as terrorists when they do so. Meanwhile, Brussels is rewarding the Tel Aviv regime for its crimes by reviving the EU's high-level forum with the Israeli regime. No meetings of the EU-Israel Association Council, as the forum is known, have been held for a decade due to apparent friction. In 2013, the Zionist regime reacted angrily when the Brussels bureaucracy